Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Peter Escho podcast. Now, last time I sat down with my business partner, Dom, and we spoke briefly about our experience in London and what we've learned building our business. My guest today is very, very special because I actually sat down with him as a mentor a few years ago and I said, hey dude, I've got plans to build this business. What do we do and where do we go? And he is Frankie Chamaki, somebody that I know from a young age, which we'll talk about, somebody that I look up to and somebody who's doing fantastic things in business. So Frankie, welcome to the podcast.
Oh God, thank you, Pete. I'm actually privileged, really, really privileged to be here.
Awesome. Well, it's great to have you. So who is Frankie Chamaki and what does he do?
Now, look, it's a long journey. I don't know how long we've got here, but I would start by saying I'm an entrepreneur at heart. And I think I started when I was really young where I try to reinvent the mousetrap. And since then, I knew that if I can use my mind to solve problems and get some value, which is, you know, could be satisfaction, could be money, could be just, you know, aspirational, that I can actually take my mind and direct it to better purposes. So since then, I've moved into diverse roles from corporate to startup to having my own little things on the side. But it's all about, you know, for me, it's all making a difference. So that's actually my career mission, is to make a difference. And I hope that everything I do does that. So it's been, so I started off graduating from Macquarie University. Went to Cabramatta High School, so shout out to the people who went out to the
West. We'll touch on that, yeah. From Cabramatta to here, right?
Yeah, no, it's a long way. Well, 40 minutes, not that far. I actually go there every fortnight to visit the folks there, my nieces and my brother. Then went over to studied at Macquarie in Bachelor of Commerce and Marketing, then got my first gig at AMP. After doing another internship at Macquarie Commonwealth Bank, and I thought I was, you know, go back to it, but I went through the application. I didn't. I was like, shit, I didn't get that job. AMP for about 15 years, but in between that, I had a lot of different roles, both internally and externally. From a business analyst to a market analyst to an online e-business sort of consultant to a product manager, application manager, and then design thinking and strategy. And that really I found my place there in strategy innovation. Again, because if you think about my career mission to make a difference, innovation by definition is often referred to as creating something of value. Mm. And so value means having a difference than the status quo. So that's why I naturally graduated towards strategy, providing footprint or, you know, a mindset, a pathway, and innovation is the way you can go about creating that new value.
That's really interesting. I'll just jump in that, you know, you went and studied business and then you're working in a business and you found all these problems within the business, or the business had these problems, and you having that inquisitive mind from a young kid looking at solving things actually morphed into a role to solve business problems. Would that be an accurate way of describing it?
Exactly. I mean, it's interesting because, and if you have kids or you're raising kids, is the question is, and it's going to be important, we will touch on AI, having critical thinking, creative thinking is going to be the key skill sets required for younger folks to compete against the next revolution, which is cognitive revolution. So we're going to outsource, essentially, before we used to outsource human physical labor, now we'll be outsourcing cognitive labor to what I call a new species of thinking. So exactly, this thirst for finding out how things work and then making it better, making a difference, has been an important mantra in my personal life.
So I remember catching the train with you as a young guy that just finished university from Fairfield Station. You know, you were working in AMP in those days, and you know, you're somebody that I used to look up to, and you know, you were slightly older generation than I was. How did you go from AMP to where you are today? So what was that journey, maybe phase two of Frankie's career, like?
I was about 5 years into strategy innovation at AMP. Then I got an email from Singapore, Coca-Cola. And this, I'll never forget her name, Lawrence, I think her name was. And she said that, hey, we've got this new role.
Out of the blue?
Out of the blue. And I said, oh, okay, yeah, thanks for the interest. Can you, they didn't even have a job description, just say, are you interested in this particular?
We want you.
Yeah. And I said, why, how'd you find, you know, why me?
Yeah.
You know? And she said, we've been looking at your blog. So they're, you know, they're like social media.
But, wow.
Yeah. And also we're looking at your LinkedIn in terms of your profile. So you had a good mix of entrepreneurship, design thinking, and startup thinking.
Amazing.
And some of your actual startups, you know, most of them failures, but nevertheless, I call them learnings. And, yeah, then it was a four-month interview process with Coke.
So this is Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola Atlanta. So
Atlanta, the parent company.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know this, but Coca-Cola is a franchise model. So they're still the rights in the of the syrup and branding rights to a bottler. And the bottler in Australia happens to be the Coca-Cola Amatil, which is a listed company. But in the US, there's many companies, bottlers like Consolidated, Reyes. They're actually independent bodies, but they have exclusive license for geographical locations.
So we're talking about the mothership, right? That Warren Buffett's invested in.
Exactly.
The one that runs the show every time you open up a bottle of Coke, has reached out to you because you decided to put yourself out there and put your thoughts out there in a blog and LinkedIn. There must have been early days on LinkedIn, right?
Yeah. So it's important, like even for your audience that are young and trying to get either to create their own business or get into business, it's not longer before when it's to say what you know will get you the job. And then we said, people to know you gets you the job. But now it's a matter of who knows what you know. Mm. And so that's a kind of that line made me think, well, yeah, I mean, it's all about building personal brand. And I'm a big advocate at Hivery where I'm trying to build personal brand of our staff. That you'll notice that if you go to our website at Hivery, a lot of the blogs and podcasts are actually from our staff because I want to build optional their personal brand because they become leaders and amplify themselves and the company in the process. So, yeah, it was basically through LinkedIn and through blogs and some of the examples of startups I had.
So she reaches out to you and says, hey, dude, the stuff – I'm paraphrasing, right? I'm sure she didn't say, hey, dude, but she must have said, hey, the stuff you're writing is really interesting. 4 months grueling interview process. What happens next?
So let me just unpack a little bit of the interview process, which is interesting. It was a bit of a case study. So basically they gave us a case study of a pitch around a problem. And the problem was around water and well-being, I think. It was a combination. And I created an idea and I pitched the idea. And they wanted to see first cut of the interview was how I actually would think about creating a new business model from a challenge that's faced by Coke. And then after that, it was a psychographical assessment online and offline. Then it was then the final four got into a workshop where we had to pitch our ideas to. We were combined, so we were trying to find founder and founders, co-founders. So I was competing, but also collaborating with my potential partner. So against four people, so there were select two. So and then end up being that what they discovered through that process is an experiment as well, is that what they wanted was somebody that has business experience, like, you know, your ex Macquarie Bank or McKinsey, but somebody has design innovation experience. And so we were basically an arranged marriage. So my business partner, Jason Hoskin, and I were arranged marriage. And they modeled us and they scaled us across 10 other hubs across the globe. So San Francisco went online, Tel Aviv, Israel, Singapore. So a bunch of us, Mexico City, so about 10. And so, yeah, what was interesting about this run, why I liked it was just firstly, we had this ability to take these assets that the company has. And when I say assets, think about this for a sec. Coke has more trucks than UPS and FedEx combined.
Say that again.
More trucks, distribution trucks, than FedEx and UPS combined.
Wow.
They're in more countries than any other. I think there's in the countries there's 195 or 196 countries. They're in 193. So two, which I think is the commonest countries they're not in.
So this is a really complex business, right? Like, I mean, we think about a can of Coke or a bottle of Coke, but for that product to actually arrive, you know, in that fridge, which you're taking it from, you're saying that there's a whole network of trucks and bottling and syrup and planning and everything else. And they've reached out to you.
Yeah,
and asked you to solve a problem, having not met you, but read your stuff. And then where does it go from there?
So once we got that on board, we started framing two areas that we want to explore. Yep. So remember, there is – I want to just give you a quick snapshot of innovation. So there's often called the McKinsey made this up, the three horizons, growth horizons, so 70, 20, 10. So 70% of your innovation happens about optimizing the existing business model.
Mm-hmm.
So you're selling Coke or let's use example Google because yep. everybody knows about Google. So 70% of Google's innovation efforts, is all about optimizing the algorithms and maybe innovation around the algorithm to make it much more effective for you to search and find your content. The next 20% is what we call is leveraging the business model. So that we move from 70% of optimizing the business model to 20% leveraging the business model. So in the context of Google, it's all about acquiring, say, YouTube back then, right?
Yep.
Because it's still search, but in the context of a video. And similar with Coke, they had 70% innovation happening to Coke beverages, like, you know, flavors and different marketing concepts, you know. But the next 20%, they actually were creating a new freestyle machine, a vending machine that dispenses 160 flavors using microdosing from the cancer medical field.
Wow.
So that's 20%, right? Some of the business model is unknown. The other aspects of the business model, like the distribution, is known.
And what's the 10%?
The 10% is the X factor. So where the business model is completely new, nothing is known about this business. It's a new business model completely, often called Horizon 3, where the business model hasn't been created. It's a new one. It could actually disrupt business model 70% business. It can go back and disrupt that. So that's where you're looking at from a Google perspective, your Google car. Google car came out. Now it's got its own company. It was an experiment. It didn't relate it to the company's core business or adjacency businesses. It was actually creating a new business model. So, and with Coke as well, this was what we were placed upon, is that they were asked us to focus on the 10%. So they have 700,000 associates working on the 70 and 20. They wanted somebody to focus on the 10%, which is a new business model. And what we did... notice that when you create a new business model, you need a different framework to solve that or come up with ideas. So a lean startup is essentially a process by which you de-risk your business model, because 70 and the 20%, it's all about, you know, 70% maybe is like, you know, Six Sigma, it's optimization. There's frameworks there that you can use. The 20% you can use pilots.
Yeah.
You know, because the business, some aspects is new, others, you know, you want to try something in branches or you want to try something in distribution. It's experiment, but it's contained. But in the last 10%, nothing is known. The pricing structure, the value proposition, you don't know what you're solving for. And so you need a new framework. So a lean startup in an experimental way, an adaptive learning way, tends to be the most effective way. So you can invest a little, learn, and then invest even more. That's similar to what I talked about when we met a couple of years ago around your ideas. Just, man, get your idea up, validate, and don't spend too much time or energy. I often call this as be lazy about your idea. Meaning yep. that if you've got an idea, yeah, just experiment, see how you go. The cheaper, the faster you do, the key concept is learning along the way, which we talk about. So, yeah, and the area that... we were interested, it was, and we had two ideas, but I'll just focus on Hivory, is data. I mean, we started this exploring this in 2013. I don't know, you remember 2013?
I remember I came and caught up with you when you were in a Coke building in North Sydney. And I was like, far out, this is a really nice building. What's Frankie working on? I think you were called, was it called Red Garage?
Yeah, that's so we, after a year of working in Coca-Cola, we couldn't innovate because remember, they were focusing on us, on forcing us to be in the 20%. And think about that you cannot create a new business model within a business model.
So I've actually read an interesting book called Disruptive Innovation by Clayton Christensen.
Yeah.
And he touches on that, right? He says that existing businesses cannot innovate because of the prejudices that come with it, or they're less, or not that they can't, but they're less effective in creating disruptive innovation. And what you touch on is that example in real life.
Yeah, I mean, there's been many cases where companies, like you can think of a Borders bookstore or even Blockbuster. What happens is that executives in tables in meetings, they said, well, this is a great idea. Netflix is coming in here to pitch us for, and that's what happened. There's a real story about Netflix and a business that actually would disrupt their own business, okay? So what do I mean by disruptive? Well, we have these stores, these physical stores that we got staff. That
we don't need you, Netflix. We've got stores you don't.
Yeah, so okay, now they're saying, but Netflix is going to disrupt that. So either you're going to join it, be disrupted, or get disrupted. So
that's right.
And Kirk had a great view on that. So, look, we don't want to be disrupted. We want to get disrupted by somebody that we own at least.
Yeah.
And so the journey began and the asset that we were interested, like I said, was data. And back in 2013, there was a lot of talk about big data, but nobody knew how to leverage it because people knew the mindset, human mindset or human constructs, such as your business intelligence teams that come in and provide insights. Big data is not about insights. It's actually leveraging to create a new thinking that allows you to actually make actions out of it. So long story short, people discovered that, hey, if we get the machine to learn and discover new patterns, it might recommend new ways of thinking. And so that's what machine learning is, or AI. By the way, machine learning is a subset of AI. AI is a broad term to cover robotics, image recognition, natural language processing. They're all a family of AI. We happen to do one branch of it. Robotics is actually another part of AI. We do machine learning specifically. And so that in 2013, it was all new concepts, really. While machine learning has been around since the 50s, actually, you know, like it's been around for, hey, it's only now the combination of a lot of power, sort of CPU power and a lot of data. I think it's Microsoft, IBM quoted that the world's 90% of the world's data was created in the last few years, 90%. And, you know, it's like continuing to grow. And so how do you leverage this? Because the conventional methods and process today do not answer it. You can't use it. You can't apply a BI intelligence team to come up with it. It's too much. The variety, the velocity, the volume is just too much.
So let me paraphrase, right? If I step back, would it be fair to say Coke approaches you and your business partner, puts you together, and then gives you the task of building the machine to interpret all their data so that they, from this process, can discover the unknown thing that's going to help them become a business success in the future.
Yeah, exactly. They you know, to their credit, they invested in this. They invested, said that, you know, I don't know. It's similar to that movie. I use this in my presentation as well. But if anyone's seen the movie Moneyball with Brad Pitt, it's actually a book.
Great movie.
Yeah, and you know that scene where the Boston Red Sox was trying to pitch him to come to join and apply his model. His words were that if companies are not tearing down teams, are not tearing down their operations and using your model, they're dinosaurs. And Coke and these companies that actually want to innovate, they don't want to be dinosaurs because, like I said, if either you're going to get disrupted or be disrupted, you can choose. And so they get disrupted but at least own or be part of that journey.
So what's your business look like today? I mean, we're talking, you guys started, when was it, 2013, did you say?
2015 we started the company, Hivory.
Yeah.
But I joined because we were exploring ideas. The Coca-Cola Accelerator, which we helped build for Coke, then they modeled us across the globe. Because we were a pilot. Actually, Australia was a pilot. So 2000, I think we actually incorporated a company in April of 2015, but actually started a commercial contract in June of 2015. So we've been around for, four or five years.
And so what's your business look like today?
So we started with about five people, which is the five founders. We got IP. The company, just so you know, it's investors at the moment, but we're about to sign a term sheet for a new investor that's coming.
Oh, congratulations! That's awesome.
Yeah, we're getting. I can say we're getting about over 6 mil injection to.
Fantastic.
Our investors at the moment is the Coca-Cola Company, Atlanta, and also CSIRO Data 61.
Okay.
So those people don't know, it's interesting. CSIRO invented Wi-Fi, so the Wi-Fi that we use every day came from Australia. So there are two marquee investors, and now we've got a third one coming in. What we do is solve the problem around returning space in retail. It's kind of really broad sort of term, but think about Coca-Cola, an example. Coke has 3,500 types of beverages. Okay, so think about this: Coke, Diet Coke, then there's container types, there's plastics, there's different sizes. How do you determine what to put into a vending machine or shelf space? Like the actual training profile, that beverage, that particular container type could be glass in restaurants, you know. That's what we do. We use machine learning, but also we combine it with operations research. So that's why our team consists of machine learning, reinforcement learning guys, AI guys, and also applied math, operations research. They're PhDs in their field. And we started with three of which were technical founders from CSRO, the actual data scientists, and two business people, which is Coke, myself and Jason. And then we now have 40, and we're recruiting another 13 for this year and another about 20. So all up, we're going to recruit another 32 that has been budgeted for. But 40 now. We're in Japan, Tokyo, and we're just opening up offices. It's finalizing the structure for the US office.
That's amazing. So I remember coming down and visiting you and Jason. I think it was two of you. And today you're a team, you know, hitting 70 people, would you say, by mid next year?
By mid next year, we'll be hopefully. Yeah, that's why you asked me, have you been to space? Yeah, we have just a couple of weeks ago, because we're trying to look at a space that would help facilitate that growth.
That's awesome, man. Well, congratulations. I'm really, really proud of you. I'm sure a lot of the listeners are really proud of you. You're a really understated guy, and that's why I wanted to get you on a podcast, because you're a wealth of information. You're an inspiration. And one of the things that I love about you, maybe we'll touch a little bit on a personal side, if that's okay, is that you're always open. You know, every time I've reached out to you, you've never been snobbish. You've always wanted to help. And so I want to ask you something now about our culture. We're both, Frankie and I are both from the Assyrian community. And, you know, growing up in Western Sydney, around the corner from Frankie, you know, I always looked up to him. And so what advice do you have for, young Assyrians out there listening to this, taking inspiration from your story and the amazing things that you're doing in terms of seeking help, reaching out to people that have more experience from them, and how it helps? How have you done it, and how has it helped you? Because I've just said that how it's helped me reaching out to you.
It's a good question, Peter. But I think the first thing to do is just bear in mind, and this is a quote I think from Steve Jobs, is the world has been created by people no smarter than you and I. And don't be manipulated by corporate enticements to join there and pay this your mental capacity to a corporate to get some rent, which has been your income, right? There's so much problems out there but you first need to be passionate about that. You want to make a difference. And the first thing to do is be more open to, you know, go traveling is amazing, because it opens up your mind, be tolerant to different cultures.
You did a lot of traveling, yeah, right? I remember that.
Yeah. And it helps a lot, you know, you become much more tolerant with it. So being exposed to different point of views and actually challenges is important. But as a young person, we've got access to YouTube. We've got so much content that, you know, but find something that you're passionate first.
Yeah.
And the second thing is that always reach out. You'd be surprised that people are more than willing to offer some advice. In fact, they feel good about it because they look like they're giving back. So the some of the things I would say for the young people is that don't be enticed quickly to corporate gigs. You know, if you've got something to offer the world, believe me, you do have something
to offer. So backing yourself. You walked away from AMP, right? You walked away from a corporate gig to an unknown.
Yeah, I mean, literally it was a startup because in my mom and dad, typical, you know, ethnic, say, move out, you know. Like,
That's right.
They're saying, why are you doing this? You got a steady job. Even today, he goes, oh, you're traveling too much. You should go back to AMP. It's been like, you know, 6 years now.
You gotta just ignore 70% of the comments that hit you, right? Maybe more.
Respect their views.
Yep.
Try to explain why, you know, and then just go for it. Especially when you're young, it's your time now. Your time to learn and burn. Because when you get into a corporate world, that's it. If you spend too much time in it, it's very hard to navigate unless you just things on the side. So have a clear purpose. you know, like I talked about making a difference. Have in your mind what that would look like. Find problems that you're passionate about. Even start today, you know. The cost of actually setting up a business or even an idea, testing an idea, it's virtually free.
That's right.
It's virtually free.
It's crossing that fear barrier and making sure that you're willing to invest the time and effort and be okay with looking like a you said something important, that there's been a lot of failures, but they're lessons, right? Failure's really, really good. I remember one thing I took away from our VC program in London was get to know quickly. No is actually good. No is better than yes. When somebody tells you no, that's fantastic, because you sit back and you say, well, there's something in that. They're teaching me a lesson. And there's a reason they're saying no for whatever I'm asking. Let me go back and fix that up, right?
Yeah, that's great.
What's the best way to reach out to people? So I was fortunate in that I knew you. I had a personality where, you know, I had self-confidence, but for somebody that's sort of sitting there, doesn't have that network, listening to this podcast, that wants to reach out, would you say LinkedIn these days, email, Facebook, Insta, WhatsApp? What's the best ways for that? Hey, dude, you know, I want your advice on something. Not you personally, but if you were, you know, younger, how would you do it?
We're so connected today. So there's no excuses for you not to leverage internet and LinkedIn and profiles. You have to have a little bit of hustle. You have to break out of that mold and acknowledge that this is difficult. Acknowledge it that say to yourself, it's awkward. Because imagine you're out there running an experiment. You have to talk to people about your idea and test your idea. It's kind of awkward.
Yeah.
But you got to get back through that. But yes, LinkedIn. But what I find also is, go to meetups. You know, say there's a topic that you're interested in. I don't know, synthetic biology, right?
Yep.
So you said, you know, I don't know nothing about it. I actually went to a couple of meetups and met interesting companies, but also interesting people.
Yeah.
So you have to put yourself out there. So you nailed it. Social media, the internet has empowered us to access people. You'd be surprised at the response. But I would say people are trying out is to have your profile LinkedIn up and running, because if like back about what I said, it's not what you know, it's who knows what you know. And you have to actually start promoting or actually building a profile.
Yep.
So invest time, it's free, LinkedIn. Even start now, even you're in high school, start now.
Awesome. Well, we're about to wrap up, but I want to ask you perhaps one big question before we finish. I know you're in business because you want to build a legacy. And I know that you're a very purpose-driven person. What's your aspiration for the business? And so if you were to listen to this podcast in 10 years' time and come to this point, what does it look like? What's the purpose for the business, and what would you love to achieve as a goal?
Well, like any entrepreneur, the purpose is to exit and create a new business.
Yep.
And use that. And basically, it's kind of, you feel, it's like, it sounds like a selfish thing, but think about it. The more capital I have, the more I can experiment and solve other new problems out there. And so the idea has always been, for me anyway, is to grow the company, have a successful exit, you know, knock on wood if we get there, and then use that money to go and search for new problems, become a child again. Like anybody that's listening to that, that's new, it, I'm going to go back to zero again and start something new. I might necessarily start the thing from scratch. I might invest in companies, but essentially, if I'd say my aspiration is to have enough to, I can continue to solve bigger problems. And the only way is you start with something small, like, you know, like you're on LinkedIn, Hivory.
Yep.
And the other thing is I would love for someone to listen to this, even one person, to make a difference in their life, for them to actually say, if he has done it, I know, you know, Frankie, or I've heard of Frankie, like his background is kind of similar to mine. Yes, you can. The person listening to you right now, yes, you can. And so I just give you an example why just changing your mind is important. Even the word entrepreneur, did you know in a lot of Latin America countries, the concept of the word entrepreneurship does not exist.
Wow.
So they know what businessman, but businessman is about selling a business model, selling watermelons.
Yeah. Okay. It's selling stuff, selling a commodity, right?
It's just selling already something exists.
Yeah.
So if you don't know that exists, right? If the word entrepreneur does, how could you be it? How could you be it?
There's no concept in their culture.
So there's no concept exactly. And so your frame of thinking goes, oh, automatically go to corporate and work for somebody because I don't know anything better.
That's right.
And so
a job is good. yeah. right? Yeah, go get a job and just stay there for the rest of your life. And if you have ambition and if you have thoughts, don't worry about it.
Yeah. So, you know, go to meetups, find something that you're passionate about. Use LinkedIn, of course, but have a voice. Start talking about what you think so people know about you. Because if, as a recruiter as well, put my recruiter hat on, when we get applications coming in, and this is going back to working in a company, but you also need experience if that's something that's a good idea. I look at people also that what they've contributed externally, like they've done blogs or they've done a startup, they've got GitHub, they've got some stuff they've done on the side. Mm. That it's like, this guy is
doing stuff.
This person, this female is just as important as well, are doing stuff. Yeah. So
they're trying.
Yeah, just give it a go. Give it a go.
That's awesome, man. So from Cabramatta, humble beginnings, to helping out Coca-Cola in Atlanta, to I'm sure much bigger things to come. Congratulations on firstly taking the initiative, building a successful business. Thank you very much for personally helping me, though there's been a few times where we've caught up, but it has actually helped. And thank you for your time today, because it's awesome to sit down and do this so that, as you said, we can share to others and we can encourage others. And if one person listens to this and that sparks the next innovation that changes the world, it'll all be worthwhile. How do people find you, Frankie, if somebody wants to get in touch? I know you're a really accessible guy. Is it LinkedIn? What's your preferred method of connection?
Yeah, LinkedIn is the best one, because you can just connect me quickly, and also forces people to actually create a profile.
Oh, that's right.
So it benefits both people.
That's right. So if you're reaching out,